Welcome back to the Rosh Hashanah Parsha podcast series. This week we will be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parshas Vayikra. And as we begin the Parshios that discuss the various karbanos that were brought in the Mishkan, it is worthwhile to take a look at how Rav Hirsch explains the concept of karbanos here at the beginning of the Sefer. And Rav Hirsch begins by analyzing the word karbon itself. How do we translate karbon? Now, typically, we would think to translate karbon as a sacrifice. That's how we describe it. However, Rav Hirsch says that that translation is incorrect. Sacrifice implies a loss or destruction of the self. When I sacrifice something, it means I give something up to accomplish something higher, whereas and as Rav Hirsch says, the concept of sacrifice is completely foreign to the idea of karbanos. When I bring a karbon, I'm not sacrificing. I'm not harming myself in any way, and not diminishing myself in order when I bring this karbon to Hashem. That is not at all the idea. Benign translation of sacrifice might be, or benign form of sacrifice might be called an offering. And Rav Hirsch says, indeed, that's the common German translation, and as well as the Latin translation. But he says offering is also incorrect, because an offering implies a gift to fulfill a need of the recipient. And we know, of course, that Hashem lacks nothing. Hashem needs nothing from us. When we bring a karbon to Hashem, Hashem does not need the animal itself. It's a pasuk in Shmuel, which we actually, I believe, cited a couple of weeks ago. Hachefetz Hashem b'olosuz v'achim, right? Hashem does not have any desire or need for animal sacrifices or animal offerings. So rather, Rav Hirsch says that the concept of a karbon can be explained by understanding the root of the word karbon, which is karov, to become close, to draw nearer. And the meaning of a karbon is to draw nearer to Hashem. The idea is that a karbon is not, it has to be understood in the context of developing our relationship with Hashem. As a result of bringing this karbon, of bringing an animal to the mikdash, and bring it on the Mizbeach, we become closer and develop a stronger bond to Hashem. It shows that the makriv, the person bringing the karbon, wants something of his property, of something a part of him, to get closer to Hashem. And by putting it on the Mizbeach and giving it over to the Mikdash, he at least in a certain way becomes closer to Hashem. This closeness, he understands, will shape his view of life and determine his happiness. He understands that closeness with Hashem is the highest goal that he can aspire to. And Rav Hirsch cites a number of psukim from Tehillim, particularly in Kapitel Ayin Gimel, which describe the yearning of a person for Hashem, and how, regardless of the circumstances in life, Kirvas Elokim, a close relationship and feeling Hashem's nearness to him in life, is what will ultimately bring true happiness to a person, and help a person rise above the challenges and difficulties in life, and bring him true satisfaction. So when a person brings a karbon, he is giving a concrete expression of his desire to become closer to Hashem, and he goes to the Mikdash and he brings something of his and gives it over to the Mikdash, and it's not satisfying a need of Hashem, it's satisfying a need, our own need. The karbon fulfills a need of the makriv, not of Hashem, and it is not something that we give ourselves up and diminish ourselves to accomplish that purpose. But rather, the makriv just comes as he is to Hashem, and share something of his with the Ribbono Shel Olam to forge that bond and make it even stronger than it was before. And with this understanding of Karban, Rav Hirsch then goes on to explain, few psukim later, to explain why the Torah tells us that Karbanos must be tamim, they must be complete, and not have any mumen, not have any physical imperfections on them. And by this physical imperfection, we refer to a type of mum, which is visible and is permanent, is irreparable. And Rav Hirsch cites how the Navi in Malachi condemns the Jewish people for bringing blemished animals for karbanos, because he says that the reason why we can't bring a baal mum is because to bring an animal that is not fully healthy, not strong in every part of its body, indicates that we do not have to be wholehearted and complete in our service of Hashem. I can withhold something from Hashem, just as the animal that I bring as a karban is cannot use every limb, or every limb is not every limb is complete. I can dedicate part of my life to Hashem and leave some aspects of my life out of the sphere of Avodas Hashem and do as I wish in certain activities, in certain areas of my life. And that's, of course, completely the opposite idea of what a karban is meant to convey. When we bring a full, complete, healthy karban, it indicates that we are giving ourselves to Hashem and giving all of ourselves to Hashem in every aspect of our life, in all circumstances. We belong to Hashem, and our defining criteria of how we conduct ourselves should be whether it is in accordance with Hashem's will. Indeed, Rav Hirsch writes that the Baal Mum would indicate that religion, service of Hashem, is only for the sickly, only for the pathetic people, cast-offs, people who do not fit into society. That's the furthest thing from the truth, because serving Hashem is, of course, for everyone in every aspect of our life, with full strength and vitality, not just for the downtrodden and cast-offs, and for people who the unfortunate people who just need to find somewhere to somewhere in their sorrows to find some sort of solace. Or as Karl Marx said, defined religion as the opium of the masses. This is not what religion is to us. It's not for someone who is just sad and downtrodden and needs something to cheer him up and make him feel better. We give all of ourselves in all of our life conditions to Hashem and hold nothing back from him. In fact, Rav Hirsch says that we see this in the Shema. We say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And if we truly acknowledge the unity of Hashem, and by unity we mean the oneness of Hashem and the all-encompassing oneness of Hashem in every aspect of our lives, of the world, and how we must be completely committed to Him because He is one, and He is the be-all and end-all in the entire world. If we truly believe that, the result is, in our behavior, should be that we express our love for Hashem in all spheres of our lives, with our heart, our soul, our money, our possessions, our strengths, whatever that might be. We hold nothing back from Hashem. We allow Hashem access to every part of our lives, every moment of our lives. And there is nothing that we do not that we should not, ideally, we should measure all our activities, all our actions, 24/7, by what does Hashem think of this? Is this what Hashem wants of me? Am I fulfilling the will of Hashem? Am I making a Kiddush Hashem? This is the measuring stick of all our actions, because Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And so, when we bring a karban, this karban should be brought symbolizing the service of Hashem in full strength, at full capacity, and not just leaving something off that is not at 100% health. And this idea finds its greatest expression through the Karban Shlamim, which are first discussed at the beginning of Perek Gimel, where the procedures for the Karban Shlamim are described. The idea of the Shlamim, which comes from the root Shalem, which means to be complete, is that it is a Karban which is brought not as a result of an Aveira, and not as a result of any imperfection, but it is a karma that is brought from a feeling of shlemus, a feeling of completion, when a person has everything. A person has everything in life. He has financial security. He has health. He has whatever it is that he could possibly want. Even in such a situation in life, a Jew feels that he still needs one more thing, and that is a relationship with Hashem. And to feel Hashem's presence in his life. Not even necessarily to give thanks to Hashem for his good fortune, but even just to recognize him, to feel Hashem. He wants to bring Hashem into his life. He has everything he could need. He has everything he could want, but he wants to feel a connection to Hashem. And so in his joyous state, in his satisfied state in life, he brings a Karban Shlamim. And this is why a Karban Shlamim is the one Karban, is a Karban that cannot be brought by a Nachri. A non-Jew can bring an Ola, but he cannot bring a Shlamim. Because a non-Jew cannot relate to this idea. The desire and the need to seek Hashem, even amid success and satisfaction, is a uniquely Jewish feeling that the nations of the world cannot relate to. That, and Rav Hirsch continues that the goal of our religion is not necessarily to comfort those who grieve and to cheer up those who are down. It's not that serving Hashem is meant to give us joy, and so when we are sad and down, we turn to Hashem. But joy is a prerequisite to serve Hashem. In fact, it's a prerequisite to enter the mikdash. An onen, someone who has just lost a relative, cannot enter the mikdash, cannot even send a karban through a messenger to be brought in the mizbeach, because service of Hashem is not meant for someone who is depressed. In a state of mourning, a person will not be able to serve Hashem properly. While other religions might see it as their goal to help all their followers overcome their grief and their difficult times and comfort them in their troubles and offer them assistance when they're down, and they say, "Oh, are you sad and you're depressed and your life is terrible? So find your refuge in God and come and worship and everything will be better." That's not the ideal Avodas Hashem in our eyes. The ideal Avodas Hashem is to first overcome the sorrow and grief, and in a state of joy and satisfaction, then we can come to the Mikdash. We can then draw on the joy that serving Hashem can infuse us with, the joy that the Mikdash can bring into all aspects of our lives. But we can only truly build on that if we have cast aside our feelings of sorrow and sadness. The truth is, the Shlamim is the highest expression of closeness to Hashem, more so than the Ola and the Chatas. We don't only need Hashem when we're lacking things. We don't only need Hashem when we've done wrong and we need to come back. But this is a proactive connection with Hashem. Even in when times are good, we still recognize Hashem's presence in every aspect of our lives. It's not just Hashem is restricting us, limiting us, and has rules for us that when we need to fix things, then we come to the Mikdash with a karban. But the idea is that Hashem's presence is a constant in our lives. Just a relationship with Hashem. To view the world through the eyes of Hashem, as we talked about in Parshas Kisisa. This is what we should aspire to. And this is something that is equally relevant to us in all life circumstances. When times are tough, when times are good, no matter what the situations may be. But we always have this yearning for a connection to Hashem, which in the times of the Mikdash we could actualize through Karbanos to give expression to those yearnings and desires. And this is what, this is the idea behind the Karban Shlamim, and this is really what a Karban is all about, an expression of a yearning to become closer to Hashem. And that understanding of Karbanos informs the rules for what kinds of Karbanos, what kinds of animals we can bring with Karbanos, and what kinds of Karbanos we choose to bring. At the end of Paragimel, after describing the procedures for the Shlamim, the last pasuk in the Parak says, that is an everlasting law for all generations in all your dwelling places. You may not eat any chelev or forbidden fats, and you may not eat any blood. And although these two isurim are explicated in much greater detail in next week's parasha, in Parak Zayin and Parsha Tzav, they are still, nevertheless, referenced here. And Rav Hirsch explains they're put here to emphasize their connection to the Karbanos. And Rav Hirsch cites a Toras Kohanim, a Braisa on this pasuk, which emphasizes that connection. And the previous pasuk concludes the discussion of the Shlomim by saying, "B'ktiram ha-kohen ha-mizbeicha," the Kohen burns the Karban on the Mizbeach. "Lecha mishel ha-reach nicholach," This is the carbon of Hashem that is put as to make a pleasant fragrance for Hashem. Kochela v'chla Hashem. All the fats belong to Hashem. And then the pasuk says, "Chukos olam udaros sechem b'chol moshu sechem," that the law applies in all your dwelling places. You may not eat any of the forbidden fats and any blood. So the Toras Kohanim says, "Chukas olam" refers to lebeis olamim, to the beis hamikdash. Meaning, not just the previous pasuk was referring to Chochel HaHashem is in the Mishkan, Chukas Olam is in the Beis Hamikdash. Meaning, further on, Udoroseichem for your generations. That word tells us that Shein Hav Hadavar Ladoros, that this Isser applies for all future generations, and B'chol Moshvoseichem tells us it applies Ba'aretz V'chutz La'aretz, wherever you may live in Eretz Israel, out to Eretz Israel, the Isser applies in full force. So, where later Hirsch views the pasuk that Chukas Olam, referring to the Beis Mikdash, is building off of Kol Chel LaHashem, which is referring to the Mishkan. And so these two psukim, when put together, explain that are really saying Kol Chel LaHashem is in the Mishkan. Chukas Olam, the Chelav, is still forbidden in the Beis Hamikdash. Lidoros Seichem, the Chelav, is still forbidden even when there is no Beis Hamikdash. And Bechol Moshe Seichem, the Chelav, is forbidden even if you may live in a place where it is not possible to do the avodah, where it is forbidden because you are in chutz la'aretz. Nevertheless, kol chelav v'chol dam lo socheilu. So we see that the prohibition against eating chelav and dam is because chelav and dam belongs on the mizbeach. If you're not putting chelav and dam on the mizbeach, you may not eat it. It is reserved for the consumption of Hashem's mizbeach. And what's interesting about this is that the Isser applies today just as equally as it did in time of the Mikdash. You might think that when Karbanos are brought, well, then we would not eat Chelav V'dam because they are reserved solely for the Mizbeach. But today there is no Beis Mikdash, there is no Mizbeach, there is no Avoda, so then there's no Chelav or dam for Hashem, so the chelav and dam should be mutar for us. But Rav Hirsch says that we see something very important from this connection, and that is that the isurim that are dependent on the Beis HaMikdash are equally enforced today, even though we have no Beis HaMikdash. And so, just because if chelav and dam were usur in the Beis HaMikdash, and if we're usher for people to eat in the time of the Mikdash, they're usher to eat now also, because we believe that the Beis HaMikdash and the state, this base mikdash's destruction, the state of churban that we are currently living in, is a temporary state, and it is not a long-term arrangement. And because of that, there's still an effect, because the base mikdash is going to come back. But first, gives the example of someone who if someone's parent is temporarily away, it doesn't mean that person is not obligated in kabeda zavicha v'asimecha. Or if a person if a person doesn't have children yet, so it doesn't mean that he's not obligated in the mitzvah to teach his children Torah. But that mitzvah is still incumbent upon him. But he just has to wait for the right circumstances in which he can fulfill that obligation. A person's parent is away, he's still obligated in kibud av v'im, but he is not capable of acting on that right now. When the parent comes back, then the right circumstances will be there, and he will once again fulfill that mitzvah. Here too, with all the halachos regarding the mikdash and all halachos regarding karbanos, writes Rav Hirsch, they're in effect even today, because the mikdash has just temporarily gone away, and when it comes back, then the circumstances will be in place, but the obligation never disappears. This really stands in stark contrast to the common, typical final paragraph in the Sefer HaChinuch by every mitzvah, where he describes the application of the mitzvah and when it applies, and he says that certain mitzvahs apply b'chol zman, and certain mitzvahs apply b'fnei zman habayis. According to Rav Hirsch, there's no such thing as a mitzvah that only applies to Zman HaBayis. According to Rav Hirsch, all mitzvahs apply today. The mitzvahs applying regarding the mikdash apply today too, in full force and full effect. The circumstances don't allow us to fulfill that now. The equivalent of a child whose parent has gone away and will return, and that they are still obligated in that mitzvah, although they're not able to fulfill it at the moment. Really, what this does, and this explanation of the Isurim of Chela Vadam, transform the observance of these prohibitions into a proof of our belief in our confidence in the ultimate restoration of the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash that will be built, B'mheira B'yameinu. And really, it also serves as a protest against Rav Hirsch writes, against anyone who tries to change our belief system and say that, forget it, the Beis Mikdash is not coming back, and these are all obsolete mitzvos from long ago, and we're not dependent on a Beis HaMikdash or Yerushalayim anymore, which, of course, Rav Hirsch is referring to the Reform movement of his time, where, as they said, Berlin became the New Jerusalem, where they no longer had any interest in return to Tzion, and deleted all references to that from their Siddur. Rav Hirsch says that the everlasting prohibition of Chela V'dam is because the Mikdash is always here, and the prohibitions of the Mikdash are always in effect, because even when the Mikdash is gone, it's a temporary arrangement. And it's something to think about when we refrain from eating dam. Even it really, this idea and this understanding of the Isser transforms a simple act of salting a chicken into a reinforcement of the belief that Mashiach will come and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. The simple act of nikur, of removing removing chalavim from an animal, from meat, which is something we don't do anymore ourselves because of the advances that we have now that we can buy all these things in the supermarket. But in the days not so long ago, when everybody salted their own meat and removed the fats in the meat themselves, really it served as a reminder that the Beis HaMikdash is coming back, because that's the only reason to prohibit Chela V'dam. And even today, we prohibit it because the Beis HaMikdash is coming back. It's not that times have changed, but rather it is a temporary situation. In Perek Dalet, in the Parsha, we read about Purim HaNisrafim. We read about the certain karbanos that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash, which were not put on the Mizbeach, but rather they were, the karbanos were shechted, the blood was taken into the Heichal and sprinkled in the Heichal itself, and then the animal's body was taken out of the Mikdash, out of the Machane Shechina, Machane Levia, Machane Israel, and was burned outside the camp entirely, rather than being placed in the Mizbeach. No part of the animal went on the Mizbeach. There are four types of these korbanos, are called Chataos Pnimios, the korban chatas that is brought inside the Heichal. The four types of korbanos, two of which we read about in this week's parsha, they are the Par Kohen Gadol, the bull brought by the Kohen Gadol if he did an Aveira that warranted bringing korban chatas, or the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur is the bull brought by the Sanhedrin or by the community in a case where a Sanhedrin made a certain kind of error in their rulings, which led most of the nation to sin erroneously in following their psak, then there is a chatos which is brought for the tzibur. And those are the two that we read about in this week's parasha. The other two we read about in parashas Acharimos, they are the par v'sorei shel Yom Kippurim. There is the bull and the goat that are brought on Yom Kippur as chataos, they where the blood is sprinkled in the Kodesh Kodashim, which we are familiar with from the Tfilas Musaf on Yom Kippur. Those animals also, the meat did not go on the Mizbeach, it was burned entirely outside the camp. So these are the four chataos pnimios, and we read about them daily in Shacharis in the first two Mishnayos of Ezehu Mekoman. The first Mishnah in Ezehu Mekoman is about Par V'sorei shel Yom Kippurim, and the second Mishnah, the Parim Hanisrafim. And Rav Hirsch endeavors to understand why these kinds of korbanos are treated differently, why they are burned outside the camp, and not put on the mizbeach, and not eaten, as most korban chataos are. And to understand this, we have to take a quickly discuss what the purpose of achila of the korban served. The achilas kohanim, when the korbanos were eaten by the kohanim, had a certain symbolism to it. The idea is that the person through the korban symbolically raised himself up to a higher level, or cleansed himself of his avera, and then the kohanim would eat the remainder of the meat that did not go on the mizbeach, because it would complete the achilas mizbeach. It would complement that, because then the kohanim were meant to serve as the symbol of the ideal person, the ideal oved Hashem, and so it would represent that person would, now that he has been cleansed of his avera through the parts of the korban that went on the mizbeach, now by having been eaten by the kohanim, he raises himself up to a higher level and symbolizes that he strives to raise himself to the ideal symbolized by the kohanim. Now, Rav Hirsch writes that achilas kohanim cannot be done by these korbanos, these chataos pnimios, because they come to atone for sins either for the Kohen Gadol, or the Sanhedrin, or for the nation as a whole of Yom Kippur when we need a kapara. The relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Mikdash, in these situations, even the Kohanim are not perfect enough to serve as an example and an ideal to strive for the Kohen Gadol, for the Sanhedrin, for the nation as a whole. It's not possible. There's nobody who can eat the korbanos whose achila will serve as the ideal that these leaders should strive for. And as such, because achila is impossible, because the symbolism that's typically found in achilas kohanim won't be there, then we instead burn the carbon entirely, rather than put it on, rather than accomplish the kapara through achilas mizbeach and achilas kohanim. Instead, the carbon is taken out of the camp to indicate that there is no one in Klal Yisrael who is capable of serving as the symbol of perfection that is necessary to be a model for the part for the Kohen Gadol, the Sanhedrin, or for the Tzibur as a whole on Yom Kippur. Nobody is blameless. So we take it outside the camp to where there is nobody, and it is burnt. And that is the idea behind the Chatos Pnimios and the Parim HaNisrafim, and the fact that we burn these karbanos outside the camp. And reverse this explains another halacha, two other halachos regarding the Parim HaNisrafim. One is that if the karban became pasul or tameh, or for whatever reason, technical reason, the karban became pasul, the karban is not burned outside the camp, but is burned in the mikdash, as other pasul karbanos are. And the reason being, reverse explains, that the whole concept of Parim HaNisrafim is because we cannot fulfill achilas kohanim with this carbon. But if it's possible, then it typically would not be eaten by kohanim anyway. So there's no reason to differentiate it from your standard carbon chatas by taking it outside of camp. Halacha number two that is explained by this idea of the chatos pnimios is the halacha that those who carry the animal outside the camp become tame. And this is an interesting halacha, which Rav Hirsch now explains with this same idea. But first, to backtrack a bit, we have to understand how Rav Hirsch conceives the concept of tuma, which he explains at length in Parshas Chukas in the context of the Paraduma. But we'll discuss it very briefly here. Rav Hirsch says that tuma is a way to counteract a belief that human beings lack moral freedom, that human beings lack the ability to make a decision, to have bechira, to choose to act as they will in the service of whether to serve Hashem or not to. And that we have the ability to control our own destiny. The epitome of that case is, of course, the case of Tumas Meis, and a person who comes in contact with a human corpse, or an Avela, someone who comes in contact with the carcass of a dead animal, so such a person becomes Tameh, because when a person encounters death, death is, of course, when nature overpowers the human being. We all succumb to death, and that's because we are, in a certain sense, governed by the physical world. And when a person comes in contact with a corpse, he is instinctively consumed by thoughts of how, ultimately, we are not in control of our own destiny, because if death comes to visits upon us, whether we want it or not, well, then in life as well, it's just a matter of we are just born because of nature and we die because of nature, and nature controls us, and we cannot overpower that with our own free will. And the problem is that to believe such a thing would undermine the foundations of the entire Torah, because the Torah is built on the understanding that we can choose to be good, we can choose to not be good, we can choose to bring good upon ourselves by virtue of our behavior. We do have moral freedom. And so, anytime a person encounters a situation which might cause him to contemplate the possibility of a lack of moral freedom, the Torah slaps him with the label of Tameh. And now he must undergo a process of Tahara to remind himself, to reinforce the belief in moral freedom. And we can talk about maybe a different time about how tevila and the mikvah symbolizes this idea of rebirth and regaining this appreciation for moral freedom. But for now, we need to understand this is how Rav Hirsch conceives the concept of tumah. With that understanding, we can now appreciate why those who carry the chatos pnimios outside the camp become tameh. Because there's a fine line between appreciating the fact that nobody can represent the ideal perfection that is necessary to provide a sign of provide an ideal for the Kohen or the Sanhedrin to aspire to, that nobody is perfect. We can understand that, but of course that may lead a person to think that we're not perfect because we're burdened by sinful desire. We are dragged down by our physicality, and that prevents us from truly being ourselves, from truly climbing higher and being perfect. We cannot reach that ideal. Right, as the pasuk in Kohelet says, "Adam ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher yaaseh tov lo yachata." There is no righteous person in the world who does only good and never sins. There's no such thing, and so we might think, well, you know why there's no such thing? Because we are innately evil, we are innately sinful, and we are incapable of doing good, and we don't have moral freedom. So the Torah tells us that those who come in contact with the Parim HaNisrafim and Seirim HaNisrafim become Tameh. So they remember that we do indeed have moral freedom. Because the truth is, Rav Hirsch says, the truth about human nature is that we struggle with our physical nature. We struggle with sensuality. But it's only through that struggle that we can grow higher. We can only reach that ideal if we struggle. Is it a very difficult thing to accomplish? Absolutely. We each struggle on our own level, in a very personal way, depending on how strong we are. Some of us have struggles with very, very, or the very basic physical desires, and some of maybe those who are on a higher level have struggles in a different way. But the bottom line is that it's a fine line between the two. And the Torah declares those who carry the Parim HaNisrafim and Seirim HaNisrafim Tameh to ensure that they don't make a mistake. And they recognize that the fact that there is no one who can fulfill the role of Achila for this Karban is not because we are innately bad, but because we must struggle to accomplish that ideal. And the truth is, Rav Hirsch writes, that eventually our goal is to accomplish, to reach that high level, to overcome our sensual nature, to be victorious in our struggle. And that is what we aspire to when we say, Bila Hamavas Lanetzach, that death will disappear when we reach that point. And Rav Hirsch cites the pasuk in Zechariah, which says, Bayom Hahu Yiyal Mitzilos Hasus Kodem Shla Hashem, Vyo Asiros Bebeis Hashem, Kamizrokim Ufnei Mizbeach. On that day, Zechariah is talking about the future time when Mashiach comes, then when there will be the bells of the horses will say Kodesh LaHashem on them, all the pots and all the cooking utensils in Yerushalayim will be Kodesh LaHashem Tzvakos, and everybody will be able to use them for karbanos. The idea being that the walls between the Kodesh and Chol break down, and the Spirit of Hashem infuses every aspect of our being. And that is our goal in life. It is something we struggle with. It's something very difficult. And it's something that, if we're honest, we recognize that there is nobody who is the true paragon of perfection at this point in history. There is nobody. But it doesn't mean we should throw up our hands and say that, well, we can't aspire, we can't reach perfection. Why should we aspire to it? We're imperfect beings. That's not true. We can aspire to it. We should aspire to it. We should not let the daunting task get us down. Those who bear the Parim HaNisrafim are Tamei, while the Karban itself is not Tamei. If someone does not carry it, the place where the animal is in the place where it will be burned, it's still tahar if someone touches it. It doesn't convey tuma, because the karban itself should not provide that perception necessarily, but it can, and we take that into account. And the Torah ensures that we have the right perspective of the chataos pnimios, and not make a mistake and adopt any false notions because of them.